Okay, it is now 3 o'clock, and I'm going to call to order the Citizens Oversight Committee Act, Citizens Finance Advisory Committee to order at this point, and we need to establish a quorum and call to order.
Vice Chair Woody?
Present.
Member Dorfman?
Present.
Member Hoverson? Quorum is established.
Okay, thank you very much. And next, we're going to any committee member announcements and presentations, I believe, at this point. So do we have any announcements or anything from any of our committee members here today?
Not by me.
Member Dorfman? Nothing? Okay. Okay, so we also have next on the list the interim assistant city manager and director introduction.
HGB. Do we have anyone on Zoom?
Yes, so we have Steve Conway, who is raising his hand.
Perfect. I would like to introduce to you today Steve Conway, who will be serving as the City of Morro Bay's interim assistant city manager and administrative services director while we run a recruitment to replace Sarah Johnson Rios. Steve comes to us from Los Altos. Is that right, Steve?
Los Gatos.
Excuse me, Los Gatos, Northern California, and he has many years of experience running finance department. And he's feeling a little bit under the weather today. Did you want to give any other introduction today, Steve?
Just wanted to let the committee know I'm sorry I couldn't be there. Prior to accepting this engagement, I had told the town of City of Morro Bay that I had planned a bicycle trip in the Black Hills, where I'm from the Dakotas, where I'm from, with my wife, and we enjoyed a little music festival, and I was in a packed company, and when I got back, driving back, I started feeling sick, and now I found out yesterday I have COVID. I'm COVID positive. So you're probably glad I'm not there in person to introduce myself, but I apologize for that, but I'm hoping to get, after 5 or 6 days, apparently, when I can get a test that says I'm clear, I'll be able to join Morro Bay. I'm looking forward to working with everyone. And I'm going to be listening in, and if there's any areas I feel like I need to jump in, I will raise my hand. But like Emily had said, I've got about 40 years of experience in various governments. Most recently, Los Gatos, where I worked for almost 20 years as director of finance. But before that, I've been in the CPA firms doing audits of government, of local government. And I work for a number of California cities. So looking forward to working with everyone in Morro Bay while you do this recruitment for the position.
As are we. Thank you, Steve. I'm so glad you could join us today. And we look forward to working with you in person soon. He will be present at our next meeting in January.
Thank you, Mr. Conway, and it's a pleasure to have you here. I hope you enjoy your stay in Morro Bay, and we hope to have you around here a long time, in fact.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Conway is a retired annuitant, so he will not be staying for the permanent position.
Okay, no problem then. Well, in either way, I do hope you enjoy your time here in Morro Bay.
Thank you.
Okay.
If I could do a quick introduction of the folks we have here.
Please.
In lieu of a director's update. So, last time we met, we had Kelly Mattis in the senior budget analyst position, and she has resigned and taken a position in private industry, and we are lucky to have gained Melissa Green, who will be serving as senior budget analyst and has prepared much of the presentation today. So we're very lucky to have her talent. We also have Erica Castillo with us today, who was on her very first day on the job at our last meeting in May. And as I had mentioned before, Yvonne Kimball may be joining us soon.
Well, it's good to know we didn't scare Eric off last time in the meeting, so it's good to see you here the next time. Always good. And thank all of you for being here today. We really appreciate all the work that you do for the City of Morro Bay and on behalf of everybody here and all the residents here in Morro Bay. Thank you so much. And if we can move on to the next item on here, the public comment. I believe this is now the time we open up to public comment at this point. So if there is anybody waiting in the queue for public comment.
Currently, there are no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. Okay, so now we will close public comment at this point, and we will continue on to our agenda items on here. And I believe our first item on here will be the approval of the consent calendar, item A1, I believe it is, which would be approval of minutes for the May 16th, 2023 Citizens Oversight Finance Advisory Committee for the special meeting we have. Do we have any input or objections or changes from those minutes? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the minutes for May 16th, 2023?
I'll make that motion.
The motion has been moved. Do I have a second?
I will second that.
That's greatly appreciated. So if we can have a roll call on the vote on that.
Vice Chair Woody?
Yes.
Member Dorfman?
Yes.
Member Hubbardston?
Yes.
Motion passes 3-0.
Okay. The next item that we have up on our consent would be the approval of an excused absence request for committee member Johnson, who could not be with us today, I believe. Recommendation from the staff, we recommend that CFAC approve the request submitted by CFAC member Jean Johnson to excuse her absence from the October 17th meeting, that would be today, from our CFAC meeting. Any discussion or any comments about this? I think it's a pretty simple item here. I'm willing to excuse it. I think it's very straightforward.
Sure.
Okay.
So I'll make a motion to approve her excused absence.
Okay. Do I have
it? I'll second it.
That's great. And if I can have a roll call on that.
Vice Chair Woody?
Yes.
Member Dorfman?
Yes.
Member Hoverson?
Yes.
Motion passes 3-0.
Okay. Moving on to the next item under Section B for business items, we have an informational session on Municipal Finance 101 Administrative Services Departmental Staff is going to be making a presentation today. And with that, I will turn it over to our esteemed staff.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll get us started here. So Chair Peck had requested that we provide a training, and he actually requested several specific items. I think actually everything in this list was something he requested specific training upon. So we're going to give you just kind of a brief overview of how government accounting works. And it's difficult to get into deep detail in a short amount of time and in a digestible way. So if you have any questions, just ask at any point in time and we'll do our best to answer you. So to start out with, we're going to cover municipal accounting basics, municipal budgeting basics, and of course Measure Q and E, which is the main assignment of this committee, and our pension debt obligations. I'll speak to the accounting basics, Melissa will speak to budgeting basics and Q and E, and Steve, if you would, speak to the pension debt obligations. So all of the work that we do is driven by generally accepted accounting principles and Governmental Accounting Standards Board, so also affectionately known as GASB. So GASB comes out with regulations that we have to abide by, and it drives all of our methods of accounting, essentially. For example, we had a new standard last year, which forced us to record all of our expected revenue from city leases. So that included all of our harbor leases, all of our city-owned properties. Anything that was on more than a month-to-month basis, we had to account for all of the expected revenue for the entire life of the lease. So that amounted to, last year, approximately $45 million and 25 or so leases. And we're talking about 30-year leases in that example. This year, we have a new standard called GASB 96, in which we have to record all of our subscription-based information technology agreements. anything more than month to month again, and the city gets to determine what we would think of as a material amount and requiring recording. And for our purposes, we're going with $10,000 or greater. So just to give you an example of the kind of things we have to watch for and educate ourselves on and then account for so that our books are in good order. All of that is published in our annual comprehensive financial report, or also known as our ACFR. We are in the final stages this week of closing our books, and we'll have our ACFR ready for City Council in the beginning of January. The ACFR consists of all of our financial statements from the management and the city manager, as well as from our auditors, and also includes a statistical section, which records 10 years of data for all of the city's activities. Oh, and I just want to call attention that for the last several years running, the city has applied for and received awards for excellence in financial reporting. That's a good thing.
Question.
Yeah.
So can we ask questions
please.
As we go through?
Please do.
Okay. So what you were talking about, I think it's on. Oh, it's not close enough. Anyway, okay, so what you were just saying that you just finished up is that the actual accounting for the last fiscal year that ended in June?
Perfect question. Yes.
Right.
So we are
okay.
Closing the books for fiscal year 2022-23.
Right. Okay.
So how do we account for all of our funds? We use a fund accounting method, which means we have three types of funds. We have governmental funds, proprietary funds, and fiduciary funds. Proprietary are our enterprise funds, which is harbor, water, sewer or wastewater, and transit. And our fiduciary funds, am I jumping all over the place? Our fiduciary funds are our trust and agency funds or custodial funds. So those are things like donations for very specific items and then have to be used in that very specific way. What did I miss here? I went off the cuff and I got out of order. So our governmental funds include general fund, special revenue funds, and general fund capital projects. And also that's where we book all of our long-term debt and fixed assets, so we know the total value of everything the city owns. Okay, and then coming back to proprietary, because I did skip ahead, our harbor fund has an operating fund and a capital projects fund, thank you. Our sewer enterprise, water enterprise, and transit all have that same setup. They all have operating and capital funds. And then we have two internal service funds, which is our risk management or insurance and information technology. And to come to fiduciary funds, these are used to account for assets held by the city acting in a fiduciary capacity or custodial capacity for other entities, like taking their donations. And these funds are operated to carry out the specific actions of trust agreements, ordinances, and other governing regulations. I think at the end of 2022, there's approximately $1 million in that fund. And I'll pass it over to Melissa, unless there are any questions.
Hello. So I will be covering your basic nuts and bolts about municipal budgeting. So on this slide, I'm basically breaking down the meat and potatoes of what we do every day, which is how we look at the money that comes in and comes out. So the City of Morro Bay budgets on a program basis, but with fund level authority. So what that means is, as Emily just described, we have various types of funds, and within those funds is essentially a self-balancing set of accounts that you charge revenues and expenditures to. And then if you drill a little bit deeper in, you get to the department level, which can be departments or, in some cases, programs. So an example of that would be in the general fund, the departments pretty much mimic the organizational structure of the city's departments. So you'll have like public works and community development and the city manager's offices, for instance. Within the capital projects fund, the departments represent individual projects. So things like the Highway 41 Main Street, Highway 1 intersection, or the WRF, or I believe you guys call it a wharf. My previous agency, we have a WRF as well. And then drilling down even further, you get to the objects of expenditures or accounts. And those are the kind of the everyday items that our staff are dealing with, things like miscellaneous operating supplies, part-time pay. It's the really granular, what are you actually doing with the funds that you're using. And then on a higher level, the city budgets on an annual basis, and that would be in comparison to the other most common structure, which would be a biennial cycle. And within each budget cycle year, we have a mid-year review, which is typically brought to council in February. Is that correct? And then a year-end review that is brought to council in October. We have a five-year capital improvement plan, and within that plan, currently there are 31 different projects that are being planned and partially funded, fully funded for this fiscal year. For the last 2 years, the city has released a budget and brief document, and that's what you see here, these two documents on the right, that are really meant to provide a kind of digestible, two-page summary of what is really essential coming out of the city's budget. So kind of explaining, how much we're working with, where is that going, what is it funding, and why does it matter? Another way that the city is choosing to communicate its budget is through the interactive budget book, which I believe we're in our second cycle of using the ClearGov tool. And this allows the city to display its budget in a way that allows a user to be able to drill down to different departments, read the specifics using, you can have a print version, of course, but if you use the actual web tool, you can navigate through a series of tabs and get to all of the different information that you need, open up and close, different sets of information. If you want to see all the details and the line items, you can. If you just want to see the narrative description about what that department does and how it's spending its money, what the priorities are, what the projects were that it got done the year before, all of that information is in there.
I've got a quick question. Mm-hmm. The 31 projects, capital improvement projects, are those the funded projects right now? Are those all funded or in the process of being funding? Or
the 31 projects have it, that are within the five-year plan. Mm-hmm. I believe there's only, I want to say there's 18 that are funded for this year.
Got it.
That doesn't mean necessarily that all 100% of the funding has been received for the project. A great example would be like the annual pavement management program.
Okay.
The city has kind of analyzed its target and determined what it, it believes you need to fund to be able to stay on track with the goals of that program. But that doesn't necessarily mean that outside of this five-year term that money exists or we know where it's going to be coming from.
Okay, got it.
But for sure, the at least this fiscal year will include, funding for the portion of the project that we think we can get done.
Okay.
Okay, so similar to the ACFR, we have taken the liberty of applying for and have received either one or both of the GFOA CSMFO awards. So the GFOA is the governmental...
Government Finance Officers Association.
There we go. And then CSMFO is the California...
Society.
For Municipal Finance Officers.
That's perfect.
Thank you. They're both a mouthful. But what makes this, important and that we've been able to achieve this year over year is that it really is a set of criteria that kind of shows that the budget documents that we have been producing are, like, of the highest caliber and meet really strict criteria. GFO alone, I wrote down, it looks at 25 different budgeting categories with 84 rated metrics. So when they're looking at your budget document, they're looking all the way down to things like, do you have your page numbers hyperlinked if you're in a document, you know, like a typical Word document, or do you discuss at least a 5-year fiscal outlook? Do you explain how, like, what your basis of accounting is? Do you explain, you know, there's all of these different criteria that you have to meet, and then you have to be able to identify the exact page number. I actually submitted this year's application. It's one of my first tasks I did here, and that is a way to really get a deep dive into your budget document, is by going through all of those different criteria. But yes, so we're 5 years running, and we've applied again for this most recent 2023-24 budget cycle. So looking specifically at this year's budget document, I chose to kind of present the what I think are some of the more important metrics, one being what is the city's primary source of revenue. And within all of the various funds, you'll see this chart here, which is showing how those revenue sources are allocated. So the general fund is the, by and large, the primary revenue earner for the city. And among all of the funds, the primary source of revenue is payment for current services. So that would cover anything from, a fee at the counter for a permit with community development to your water and sewer utility bill. Followed by sales and use tax, property tax, and then transient occupancy tax. And then if you drill down into that large chunk, which is that general fund, you see it, the revenue sources shift a little bit. Within the general fund, which is that primary revenue earner for the city, the primary revenue source there is actually property taxes, DOT, sales tax, and then lastly, current services. Looking on the expenditure side, again, the general fund is the big spender, followed by the sewer and water operating funds. And then within the general fund, this shows how all of the expenditures are allocated. So with police and fire being the most expensive departments to operate, followed by public works, community development, recreation, and so on. Within this year's budget, we included a 5-year fiscal forecast. It's looking at primarily the operating side of the general fund and Measure Q and E funds combined. And what this shows is a positive balance, but it comes with the caveat that it does not include any capital improvements. So this is strictly operating funds. And if you add in the capital expenditures, it moves that combined fund balance to a negative, ending at a $2.6 million deficit by 2028. So that's compared to that $0.2 million surplus when you're just looking at operating. So what this is obviously highlighting is the city's inability to fund projected capital improvement needs for the future. I just started, as you all know, so I was really hoping to get this presentation from my former boss. And one of my questions would have been, well, what do we do?
Well, that was my question. You can there you go.
That's a good question for the interview for the new assistant city manager.
Well done.
Okay, moving into Measure Q&E, which I probably should have highlighted on that previous chart. It's a little slice of the pie there that actually does a lot. So the background on this is there's two measures here, Q and E. Q has been around for a while, passed by voters in 2006. It's a half-cent tax compared to E, which was passed in 2020 and is a one-cent transaction and use tax. I did learn from Sarah before she left that the Measure Q&E is a general use tax, so it can be used for anything, but the city has chosen to prioritize that funding, and these four bullet points are the current priority list that has been published within this year's budget, and then there's also a fairly comprehensive handout that's on the city's website that explains the various measures that they're hoping to achieve under each of these categories. The Q&E requires an independent finance advisory committee, that's you guys, to review annual expenditures. And then the independent annual financial audit, I understand, is part of our ACFER each year. For this year's budget, we have projected a 6% increase in revenues over the prior year and a 10% increase in expenditures, which is offset by that projected $1.2 million fund balance. As a newbie to the city, I enjoyed this chart because it was interesting to see how those funds have been prioritized and the way that the various colored blocks have been moving. We've moved into a kind of more equitable allocation across the various departments. So I don't know if that deserves kudos for our public works director for making his blue bar get a little bigger every year, but I think that's why they hired me. I like looking at that kind of stuff. We have now come to the portion of the presentation that I'm hoping our interim director can help fill us in on. Are you there, Mr. Conway?
Thank you, Melissa.
Can I interrupt you for one second? I'm sorry to interrupt you on this. I have a quick question back to CUNY. A couple slides before this. If I understand your presentation right, we're being told that Q&E can be used basically for anything. Is that correct?
Okay. My understanding, yes, is legally it is not restricted.
Okay. And I assume that the city council understands that. And
yep,
they'll be setting a priority for where they want to go with this.
Correct. That's what those four bullet points are: supporting fiscal sustainability, maintaining public safety services and staffing, ensuring cleanliness and safety of public spaces, and investing $2.3 million in street and sidewalk improvements. And those are just a summary of that larger document, which really goes into depth on the different goals that they have within each of those categories. But yes, that's the reason, my understanding again, is the reason why the council has published this document, is to be able to show the community how they are prioritizing these funds.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure of. Okay. That's it.
So it's, I think, Steve's turn to speak, and I will try to discuss the CalPERS unfunded liability. Trying not to get into, my son's an actuary, so I'm going to try not to get into all the actuarial terms, but basically the CalPERS plan, as most people know, is a pension plan that is defined, which is a defined benefit plan, meaning that the benefits are usually a factor of your years of service and your salary. And so that benefit is sort of a fixed payment. And what that is what is projected out over your lifespan as your as a retiree to arrive at a actuarially determined amount of benefits that would be paid out over time to anyone who is receiving a pension. And so as this slide points out, you know, there's three principal ways of funding those pension liabilities. Those are the contributions from the employees themselves, which is usually set through the bargaining process and state law in terms of what allowable percentages can be contributed by the employee. Then there's an employer contribution, and then the bulk of the earnings, actually the pay pensions, are actually determined through CalPERS own investment investment returns. So what happens is why a city, which is common in California for many cities, do have unfunded pension obligations, and what caused this issue to become of concern is there was a gap between the amount of calculated future benefits of someone receiving a pension and what the assets were set aside for that particular California government. So there's when that gap exists, that's really what is now termed an unfunded pension obligation. And how did we get to that point where we have a gap, where there weren't sufficient funds set aside for the future benefits, is that the contributions made by the employer and by the employees assumed, and CalPERS assumed, a certain rate of return on their investments. And this is, it's not quite technically correct, but it's often referred to as the discount rate. And for many years, I think CalPERS had a discount rate approaching 8%, meaning they assumed a rate of return of 8% or thereabouts, very close to that. And as you can see from the slide on how did it happen, I'm not seeing the slides, and I don't know if the committee can see the slide on how did it happen.
Yes, we can, Steve.
Okay, perfect. In many years, you know, if you look at the late 90s, market was doing very well. CalPERS was more than exceeding their target discount rate. So that means they were building up assets. There was no gap between what was predicted to be the employee's pension payouts and what was set aside in the CalPERS plan for each city. So there was really, in many cases, what were termed surpluses by CalPERS. This, of course, led to, around the late 90s, a lot of cities, through the bargaining process, enhanced benefits because there was surplus funds available in their pension plan. And this was one of the contributing factors, because you can see in this slide that, especially in the year 2008-09, there's CalPERS not only did not meet their target, they had significant losses, 24%, if you can see in the red there. Those huge losses had to be absorbed by the plan, and that is really what has led to this gap between what the expected pension benefits to be paid out and what are the plan assets currently available to pay them. So there is a long-term plan from CalPERS to address this problem. For one thing, they're lowering their expected rate of return over time, which will then increase liabilities, unfortunately, because if you assume you're going to be making less money off your pension investments, means that the employer contributions and those would probably increase because you're assuming a lower rate of return for the future, so that means someone has to pick up the dime on that. So I believe that, you know, a lot of cities are in this situation. It is somewhat ameliorated by the fact that there have been in recent years, some years in recent memory, within the past 3 to 5 years, when CalPERS has actually exceeded their expected rate of return. So in those years, you actually add to assets, and that will reduce the unfunded liability. So it's sort of a moving target. It's not a fixed amount. It changes every year depending on the CalPERS return The return for fiscal year 22-23 was 5.8%, but CalPERS had assumed a rate of 6.8%. So there's a 1% underfunding that occurred from the prior fiscal year. If this year were to follow that same trend, that of course, when you have a 1% gap, that adds to the liability that cities would experience from the lack of return not meeting the goals that CalPERS had set up in its plan. If, of course, in the future, if the CalPERS returns do accelerate and go beyond, then that, of course, reduces the unfunded liabilities. So it's really a matter of staying on top of it. And I noticed, I do see that the City of Morro Bay has established a trust account to set money aside, which is good for addressing this problem. It does provide some flexibility in helping to pay down, having a chance to maybe pay off some of the unfunded liability. In Los Gatos, we paid off probably $10, $11 million worth of unfunded liability. So it's definitely something that a lot of cities are considering and are doing. But it just takes a lot of analysis. We actually hired an actuarial firm to take a look at it for us, and Bartel and Associates, which is now Foster, I believe, and I would recommend Morro Bay might even want to look at that in terms of looking at the future and seeing how best to manage that liability. It's a lot of it's based on actuarial calculations and assumptions. It's nice to have people sort of in the business that are dealing with helping cities deal with this problem. So that is pretty much all I had on pension obligations. I'm happy to take any questions on that.
I'm just trying to figure out how I guess I don't really understand how this liability trust works. The City of Morro Bay is putting funds into it. Does that count as part of the funds that the city is putting towards the pensions in general? I mean, you said, I think that the investment returns are the lion's share of the amounts that are put into CalPERS, then the employees contribute some, and then the employer, i.e. the City of Morro Bay, puts in some.
Yes. Yeah, the pension trust, I believe, is this particular trust is not held by CalPERS, but it is a trust where assets are set aside for the purpose of addressing the unfunded liability in whatever fashion the city believes would make the most sense. In some cases, you can write a check to CalPERS and say, our unfunded liability is $10 million. We'd like to apply the $2.3 million and drop that from $10 million down, reduce it down to, $7.7 million as an example, using this slide on cost containment strategies. That is one option. And that is something that, we've done in Los Gatos, but the other options are you could draw from this $2.3 million to possibly help with the employer contributions that are required. There's a lot of flexibility in those trusts, but it is money, I believe, and Emily, you could help me, I believe, is it PARS that's holding this money? I believe it is.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So now we're just trying to earn money on our money and build up a reserve.
Yes, the other thing that's, I know when PARS has a number of different investment options, you can choose various levels of risk you want to take with your money. One of the attractive features of this trust plan or trust account is that you can pick various levels of risk. If you want to be very aggressive and you'd like to try to outperform CalPERS, you can do that. If you think CalPERS is too aggressive and you want to protect your assets, you would possibly choose a more conservative portfolio in that trust. So, but these are Morro Bay assets that can be used pretty flexibly towards addressing the unfunded liability. But they are not part of the CalPERS plan. They are currently part of the assets of Morro Bay.
But it sounds like CalPERS keeps track of each city's liability.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Okay, so if somebody actually retires from the city of Morro Bay, that's their last job, then they're part of Morro Bay's pension outlay, I guess.
That's correct, but you know, they may have come and had years of, so someone, in my case, I had 38 years of CalPERS, 20 of that was Los Gatos, and then the other 18 years were, you know, Costa Mesa in Orange County, California, Laguna Beach. Costa Mesa, and the city of Campbell, which is also up in San Jose. So my pension is being picked up by a number of different cities because it's based on my pay I received from each of those four governments and the years of service I served there.
Okay.
So, yeah, if I had done 40 years of service with Los Gatos, then Los Gatos would be picking up the entire liability for my 40 years of government. But it's more typical that someone would have a mix of years with different cities.
Boy, that must have been fun to keep track of the four computers.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Just real quick on this, that trust balance that we have set aside right now, that $2.3 million, in your world of experience, and if you could give your professional advice on this, we've got it at $2.3 million. Should the council and should the city of Morro Bay be going for even higher than this? And what would be a number that you would put on the wall as a goal for this particular trust balance to be?
Well, that's a good question.
Not to put you on the spot, but...
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, there's not an easy answer to that because, there's a lot of competing priorities with every city in terms of... because when you do set aside dollars in this account, they're restricted for that use, so now they're not available for other government purposes, so they can only be used for addressing the pension obligation. So it's a matter of political priorities, also a matter of good fiscal taking care of your house, the fiscal housekeeping, because you don't want to find yourself in a situation where you have liabilities that are causing a big huge drain on your ability to fund government services. So it's really There's really not an easy answer. I appreciate your question, but there really isn't an easy answer for that. One of the things that I found very helpful was, when you have, worth the money, was to hire like Bartell and Associates, which were an actuarial firm, and they basically presented a 20 to 25 year plan about how best to address this liability and get it where you can see a curve, you can see the liability rise, but then using the plan and how you expect to fund it, you can see that the curve peaks and then starts to drop, where the liability and the obligation needed, the resources you need to pay off that obligation start to drop. And that's very helpful because otherwise, one of the dangers, I guess, of placing money paying CalPERS is that, of course, if they don't meet their plans, it's kind of you've given resources that are the city's resources, and now they're in the CalPERS plan, and now they may have had a huge market loss, or you tend to run that risk. So I think the best advice I would give, and the best my own experience, was to take the time to really study it and look at the long-range forecast on the pension obligations, the unfunded liability, how the city expects that the employer contribution rate to be a certain percentage, how that's going to change over the years based on certain assumptions on how CalPERS is going to do on its investments, and use that as your guide before you decide to determine what level of funding you need in that trust. But those are all things that, you know, I'd love to help with and in any way I can, because I know it's an important issue for many cities.
That was my only point, my only question on that.
I can add that the city is working with NHA advisors on looking into a long-term plan to tackle UAL obligations, and we do have, it's a little outdated at this point, but we do have a kind of a chart that shows the smoothing options, and it'll help you look at that long-range impact to the city. So I can share that with you after this meeting, make sure it's included in the slide deck that gets published.
Yeah, that would be great. I know that, it's always hard for all cities, and this one being no different, trying to figure out what the budget priorities are for every year. And, everybody's doing the best they can on this. But I guess in my own perspective on this, when I see this pension trust balance at $2.3 million, I'm really grateful that this city is taking that type of priority on this and saying, hey, let's put something in the little account over here just to make sure we can smooth everything out. But well, I'll tell you what, I mean, it would make me happy if, like you said, if we could set up some goal for the city council to be presented with to say, hey, let's have a goal every year, and I'm just throwing out numbers, setting aside an extra $500,000 every year or whatever that is, if that's the target goal every year, for each one of these budgets. I think that would help the council a lot and help you guys a lot in what you're trying to do every year. And in the long term, it really help out this, the liability issues that can take place on these types of accounts, because some years they really go sideways, and that's not a lot of fun to deal with.
Yes, I appreciate those comments. I just wanted to add that we established this trust just this spring of 2023.
Yeah.
So we made a contribution in fiscal year 22-23, and we had budgeted and have made the contribution in 23-24 already.
Okay.
And so this will grow. I think the amount we budgeted in 23-24 was the maximum amount that we had available to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the amount in excess of our required reserve in the general fund.
Yeah, that's just brilliant. And I think, to know that you guys have planted the seeds that 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now, everybody's going to be so grateful that you guys started this, and it's so well appreciated.
Thank you, I appreciate that, and I have to give credit to Sarah Johnson Rios for pushing that one through.
Definitely, yeah.
Thank you.
I do have something to say. Thanks. So, my question is with CalPERS and their investing strategy. It looks like in 2009 they lost about a 25%. I think, from what I understand, they're more involved with private equity firms now, but it seems like if we're going to want to continue to put money aside for that, for me personally, it'd be nice to dig up what their investing policy is and how it's different from where it was in 2009 and how we can prevent being involved in that kind. I know it's like that, but it shouldn't be, right? Our city doesn't need to take a 25% loss.
The investment strategy was proposed and by council, I think upon recommendation from this advisory body. And
current one or the past one?
Our current investment policy for these specific funds with our PARS 115 trust. So they didn't go full aggressive, but it is on the more aggressive side of the spectrum for these funds.
Right. What I'm curious about, maybe it would be useful information, is understanding the way CalPERS has changed their investment policy from 2009. I only have a little information on that, but I think it might be more interesting since they're the big, it seems like they're a big factor here, right?
But in the long run, if you look at it, they've made more than 8% over 30 years, on average, which I think is pretty normal.
No, I think they're doing great. I think
no, you're going to always have highs and lows.
I think what I'm saying is I think that they're in a better place for an upside based on their kind of restructuring and their strategy for investing. I just don't know if we've made it a little bit more comprehensive. Like, hey, this is how they were investing in 2009, and here's how they're investing now. Because I think they've really flipped quite a bit of their strategy.
Is that some information you'd like us to bring back to you?
I'm sure Steve knows a lot about that.
No, this is Steve. There has been a change in their strategies. I know in the 2009, for instance, they were, I think there was a fair amount of real estate investments, and I believe they've changed strategies there in lowering the discount rate, and that's their goal, is to lower it over time. It means the assumed rate of return provides them more opportunities to take less risk. That's got a good side and a bad side, because if you take less risk, your returns are not going to, you're not going to experience the peaks. Your peaks won't be as high, but your valleys won't be as low in general when you tend to be a little more conservative. But I know, I don't have all the details, but I know that CalPERS board has, and their investment policy has become more conservative as they've tried to lower their assumed rate of return.
I think that, that's what I was saying. I think that's why they've gotten into more of the private equity. I guess the thing is, since they're controlling so much of the money, are we able to respond to them in a yearly fashion based on their, at one point, like in 2009, the conversation could have been, does Morro Bay need more of an investment in real estate? It really doesn't complement what Morro Bay already has. So that would have, to me, would have been a bad idea to put an investment in a big pocket that's more investing in real estate when we're already covered there. So I'm just wondering how much are currently, it seems to me CalPERS is on a really good path, but do we regulate them on a yearly basis to make sure they're still compatible with what we have in Morro Bay, so we're not on the risk with them? I think they're doing a great job, and I really like who they're currently working with. I just don't know if anyone's, how we're keeping track of them, since they seem to be a big factor in this.
Their board meetings are public. They're in Sacramento, and they have, I believe, almost at every meeting they have their investment advisors discussing their portfolio and their current strategies, and those are all public record, and you can follow, anyone, including any city staff member, can follow those and see.
Are we currently doing that with our staff? I don't know. I mean, I just showed up, but. It seems like they're a big player, so do we have something that kind of watches them and keeps track of?
One of the big differences, because this is a pension plan, it has allowable investments. As an example, California government code is very restrictive for cities in terms of what the city can invest in. And if you look at the City of Morro Bay's investment policy, I'm sure it will lay out a certain number of categories of investments that are allowable. But CalPERS, because it's a pension plan, is separate. It has a separate and much more, as you mentioned, private equity, that sort of thing. Those types of investments aren't legal right now for cities, so it would never be that the city could really conform to CalPERS, because there's certain investments like speculative, but real estate as an example, even though that may be an attractive investment, because of cities losing money on more speculative types of investments, California government law has changed the ability of cities to go into those types or buying stock. The equity market is closed off to cities. So those kind of options aren't available for cities to invest in. So you're
saying they're the only game in town?
Pretty much in the city side. What are allowable investments, and I'm just going to be real general, are U.S. Treasuries, U.S. Government agencies like Fannie Mae, Federal Home Loan Bank type of bonds, and commercial paper, that sort of thing. But anything in the equity side, or the more higher risk, higher return type of investment, types of investments are not legal right now under California law.
I guess they can do what they want. We're in.
I mean, no, I mean, if you have more questions, please.
I think they're doing a great job. I do. They changed course, and if they were to change course again, what's our recourse? And it sounds like, given what we can invest in, then there are other options, but it's not pertinent right now, to me, it seems.
Okay.
You know, if they were to change course, in other words, who do we have saying, oh, CalPERS currently is working, as Steve said, they're working with these firms where it's less risk-oriented. Mm-hmm. And so if they were to change their strategy, are we then red flagged? Like, oh, they're currently now, I don't think they're going to, but since they have, how does Morro Bay track that? And do we have, yeah.
And I'm Yvonne Kimball. I'm the new city manager for Morro Bay. And first, it was very nice meeting with the committee. That's my first time meeting with you. And Steve, thank you so much for joining the meeting remotely. And I'm really looking forward to meeting with you in person when you're available.
Thank you, Yvonne.
Yeah, sure. And I just want to comment on Brian's comment on that. I agree. I appreciate your comments. And CalPERS is certainly is a huge organization, and they have their own advisories, and they have probably many consultants on the side to advise them how to invest. But like Steve was saying, that they have a governing board, and the board basically set a policy. And then your question in that was staff tracking those policies. Unfortunately, I don't think our staff will have the resource to track what CalPERS is doing. Should we? Probably if we had the resource, we should. That's why the city had these cost containment measures, such as a trust, establish a trust, so that that money in the trust can help with ebb and flow. Because PERS have bad years, when PERS has bad years, pretty much everybody have bad year, because they're gonna just, you know, there's going to let the cities, the agencies, to share their bad year, and then that's where the trust there's like a cushion, and then you can use that to offset the bad year. So I think one of the things, if the commission you are interested, we can certainly give you the PERS link, then you can help us to monitor what's going on there. And the other point I wanted to make is that as far as does the city want to invest our money aggressively and all that stuff, that's really a policy decision. CFAC, you can certainly make some suggestions, recommendations, and we can bring to City Council, and then staff can implement that to the extent that we can.
Okay, yeah, and I think Brian brings up some interesting points here. And I think the one of them that he does bring up, that I think our new city manager, welcome to Morro Bay, by the way, we're glad to have you here, is the idea that, you know, maybe this is an issue that we should, you know, take a look at again when we meet again in January as a council, because the council is going to be obviously going through this, or during the budget hearings, you know, would the council be interested in our input on something like this when it comes to unfunded liabilities?
Yeah, certainly. If the question is addressed to me, that certainly that's if that's what the committee's interest lies. I understand major Q and E is what the committee's focus.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it. I really, when I talk about investment, I myself is not a a person that can speak very well on the investment strategy and all that. That's about my pay grade, really.
Yes.
People make a lot of money, and I don't have that kind of background to do that. And Steve, perhaps our interim finance director, perhaps he has more intimate knowledge than I do. I believe that, and he and I can speak more on that. What I wanted to bring to the committee's attention is that I really appreciate your expertise and your interest in the liability, reduce unfunded liability and then other liability. The city, the purse unfunded liability is only one of the liabilities the city face.
Sure.
So there's other things that I think we could, there are a lot of things we could benefit from the committee's your expertise. The EQ, of course, major EQ, that's your focus. And then, but there, I think it's just that I didn't want to distract committee's attention and staff attention to chase the investment policies and all that. And then that's where usually these kind of things are hired. Some consultants can help us with, and because we really do not have that kind of expertise.
Sure, and obviously anything like that, I mean, it's a high level of expertise to do something like that. And I have my own, yeah.
Right. Yeah. We understand what's going on, we can read some of the things, but you want us to advise, oh, is this good or not? I have too many other things that I need to pay attention to, and I didn't, like I said, these would be above our pay grades, all of us. So that's something that really very, very specialized, and if that's the committee's recommendation, we can certainly approach the city council to carve out some money and then hire some qualified firms to help us with monitoring the strategy, and so we can, you know, we can do the best, we can get the most out of our money.
And I think I'm just speaking for myself sitting up here, and obviously if the two of you or the rest of the committee has a different view, please speak up and say something. But, you know, one thing that, going back to what our city manager was pointing out, she brings up a good point, is that the gist of CFAC is primarily to oversee Q&E, mm-hmm. if I'm correct on that. And I'm pretty sure that is what the direction of the city council is. I would say in this respect, I've always wanted to make sure that we do what the city council wishes us to do here. And that's an important thing. I mean, I might have my own opinion on,
right.
Oh, heck, you know, roundabouts, you know, or anything like that. But that's a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. My biggest concern, though, is making sure that we don't overstep not just what this committee was supposed to be about, what we were chartered for, but making sure we do what the city council and our mayor is looking for us to accomplish here and what we discuss up here. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe there's a way to, you know, transmit that idea to the city council and explain to them that, you know, are we doing the right thing here? Do you want us to really just focus on Q&E? Did you want us to look at some of these other issues? But my reading on this is that our biggest stake in all this is reviewing Q&E funds.
Yes, I have to agree. Of course, we can the committee can meet with City Council and you can ask them directly. But my recommendation from staff level is that what keep me up at night is that I cannot. You saw the slides. We're not solvent. In a few years, we'll have more needs than revenue can support. That's what really concerns me, and I know that concerns City Council as well and our employees. And so that's where I'm saying that big picture is how can we balance the budget, and with all these needs in front of us, a pension liability, and then infrastructure, capital improvement, and then just retention, recruitment, and all these things that in front of us, I need the city council and then finance committee to help, because everything is going to come down to the money. If you don't have money, you can't do anything. You can't provide essential services. That's why what you do here is so invaluable. And so I would really rely on your expertise to help city council and help myself and the staff together. We can devise a plan, a practical plan to enhance revenue and then somewhat look at prioritize our expenditure and make it in alignment with the strategic goals. So those are the, you know, very tough questions to need to be addressed. And then I really, really, really looking forward to working with the committee and of course finance staff to make that happen.
Yeah, and I know one of the things that we've talked about here, and it's been bantered around back and forth over, quite a few months now, is the idea of getting a joint meeting with the city council and us all in the same room, even if it's just a quick meeting, you know, 30, 45 minutes, whatever it is, and to talk to each other face-to-face on the record in front of the community, saying, making sure that we understand our role in this. And I know the chair of this, chairman, Stephen Peck, he and I have talked about this as well as all of us sitting up here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is this something, you know, maybe if it's okay with this, with the three of us here, you know, to relay a message back to the council, we really like to see that meeting still happen, if that's okay with you.
Joint meeting.
Have a joint meeting. We'd be thrilled to have that. Yeah. And we think it'd be extremely productive to put us all in the same room, because sometimes I've seen this conversation come up before. As where, you know, are we, you know, we have our concerns over the finances and over the budget, but then are we overstepping what they want us to do?
I think you make a good point. I was in a meeting last week or something. They were allocating funds for different organizations.
Yeah.
And I should be more informed in that environment. The more we're understanding what the other people know. So in other words, I showed up to help people reduce their budget from 90,000 to 60,000.
Sure.
So I just got my calculator. Well, there's all the politics, you know, this person wants it. And I think we're all basically number crunching type thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah,
it'd be good to get together with the politicians who are like, hey, here's certain limitations you may not have considered. Because I think we can look at a button. It would be helpful to get those two voices together.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, you know, all of us up here can agree, you know, all of us had enough of our times of sitting in front of YouTube videos figuring out how to use an Excel spreadsheet correctly to a point where people think we're maniacs or something like that. But the reality is that I guess it's just we just want to make sure we're doing what's desired by the public policy and by staff and everything so we can stay really focused up here. But if that could be transmitted to the council that, hey, we'd really like to see a meeting with all of us in the same room, I think it'd be really productive for everybody.
Yeah, and I just circling back as a point is when I brought up CalPERS, it has nothing to do with we should take certain action or we need more information. Mm-hmm. It's just the money mind saying, oh, well, they've taken a big change in direction. Is the town actually aware of that? I mean, if they are a minor partner of ours, is anybody have a comprehensive historical understanding of what CalPERS has done for us? I'm not looking for a committee to go in and work them and decide if they're making good decisions or not. I think it'd be interesting if I was involved in Morro Bay politics, I'd want to know what their general philosophy is and how it's changed. And then I'd be able to give that information to people like us up here going, oh, well, we've worked with CalPERS for 10 years and that was more my thinking. It's a general idea of how these things are operating, not the specifics of how we change them. If I understand the politics around it, I can start deciding how to throw numbers around.
Yeah. No, I understand. I will relay your...
Sorry, I'm not looking to slay CalPERS. I really like them, and I have a ton of information about them when they're investing. I'm just wondering where Morro Bay stood. And it's good to know that they don't stand anywhere. They're not that deeply informed with how those intricate pieces have changed, which is fine. It's good for us to know what's going on both sides. I guess that's, you know, to the point here is it does help to talk to the individuals who are more grinding through this on a yearly basis.
Okay, well, good point. I will certainly relay the desire, if that's the desire of the board, direction of the commission, that you would like to have a joint meeting with City Council, and then I can certainly bring it up with City Council, and we can schedule something later on.
Okay, that'd be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, is that any other comments on this particular agenda item anybody have? Does anybody on this board have any other comments about this particular agenda item?
Laura, were we just kind of still in the middle of the presentation? Oh,
no.
Okay.
Do you have any questions or anything?
No.
Sure. Okay. Brian, you okay with? Okay. If I'm reading our agenda correctly, that was the last item on the agenda. Real quick, let me just double check. Is there any public comments on this particular agenda item? Anybody waiting in the queue? I would take that as a no.
No raised hands.
Okay. Okay, I'll take that as a no. So is that everything for the meeting today? Any future agenda items beyond what we discussed about potentially having a meeting, but any future agenda items? Anybody want future agenda items? Okay. I don't hear any. So should we call the meeting closed? Okay. The next meeting. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'm terribly correct. Thank you for correcting me on that. The next meeting. Yeah, I'm sorry. The next future meeting is scheduled for January 16th of 2024. And I would assume it would still probably be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, same location here. And if there's nothing else, then...
So I know from what I've seen in our February meeting, next February, we're going to be reviewing the end of the year, the halfway point budget and what's happened. Do you know what we do in January, typically?
Yes, in January, we will bring you the final expenditures and revenue for Q&E for the fiscal year 2022-23.
Oh, okay.
And then, so we'll review how the year ended, and then in February, we'll review where we are in midpoint for 23-24.
Okay. All right.
I believe that's everything?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we adjourn this meeting? Okay. And the time is... That's a good question. I don't have my watch.
4:12.
4:12. At 4:12. There you go. Thank you so much.
There's no clock.